Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to our live Q&A call here. I'm Joanne McCall, and we are in for a treat today because I'm going to be interviewing a wonderful radio host and newsman by the name of John Erickson. Now, John and I go back a few years, one or two decades maybe. Maybe
20 years.
It's been a while. So anyway, John, I want to welcome you to our program. I call it a program. It's a program. Today it's a program.
Well, thank you, Joanne.
So, John, I know that you've been a radio host and newsman with K103 for a long time in Portland, Oregon, also with 62KHW Radio. You've worked in Houston. You've worked in Denver. You want to give us a short summary of your career, what you've been doing, and what's going on right now?
Sure. I'm doing my dream job. I've been in this job for 28 years. That's freakishly long for radio, but I am one of three equal partners on the morning show that is currently the number one morning show in Portland on K103, also known as KKCW, and it's a soft rock station, and we play a lot of Miley Cyrus, we play Taylor Swift. But we also talk about what's going on in our lives and in the news of the day, and I think people are used to hearing us, and we're just part of the fabric around here. We're part of the furniture. People are accustomed to us, and so we've had just a really good run here, and I hope it continues for years longer. It's great fun. I've also worked in the all-news realm. I was news director of an all-news station in Seattle and one in Houston, and that was very interesting. I enjoyed it as a news person, but it didn't allow my personality to pick out, and it was very stressful. And so I chose to be a part of a morning show on a music-based station. Other points along the career, I've been in Denver, where I was raised, spent some time in San Francisco, and, all in all, I've just come back to Portland every chance I could, because here's where I feel like it's home, and that's where Joanne and I met, right here at this station.
Yes, at K103, and I think actually I was on the air at KGW, and you were, as I recall the story, you were driving to the beach.
I was.
Am I dreaming that? That was when you...
Yeah, that's the first time I ever heard you on the air. I had just started here. I was on my way to the coast to cover a story. It was a gubernatorial debate, and I just punched on KGW radio, and here you were doing middays, and I thought, you sound wonderful. I mean, just a spectacular on-air talent, so warm, so communicative. And we met and we became friends and still are.
That's absolutely, well, thank you for that. That was very kind of you to say. And yes, we've been friends for quite a while, and I've always admired your work, and K103 is definitely a staple in this area, that's for sure. So today, what I really wanted to talk to you about, John, is we have a lot of people more coming on the call now as we speak, and I want to talk about how to book radio, because we've got a lot of people here who have books, and also some people who have taken my programs who don't have books, but they have a business or some product or something, a cause that they want to promote and further. And so I wanted to have you on today to really talk about this from your perspective. I've shared with them as a publicist, because I was in radio and then I became a publicist, and I've been pitching people for years, but I want to also get your viewpoint in there. And you and I can both talk about our experiences so that people will benefit and that they can get out there and promote their own books or business. Sound good to you?
Yep, sounds great.
All right. So you mentioned before the call officially started that you're also doing a public affairs program now. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Right. Even though we are a music station, we and all radio stations are required to serve the community through our programming, and to do so in ways that address the needs and the problems and the interests of the community. Translated, that means that we do, on the weekend, a public affairs program. And it used to run in the middle of the night and hardly anybody would hear it. But we put it on when a fair number of people do. We put it on Sunday morning, or Sunday evening. And in fact, all of the stations owned by our company, Clear Channel in Portland, run the same program, and I do the program. It's a 30-minute program in which I interview people, including authors, including community leaders, including activists. And what I'm looking for is people who have something to say, some insight to lend about a problem in the community, some solution or some something that they can say that listeners can gain some insight from. And you know, the needs in this community are similar to any other community, the environment, health, the economy, public safety, minority issues, citizen involvement. You know, all of these things are important. And if you have something to say about that, and if it's something that I can make relevant to the audience in Portland, Oregon, I'd like to hear from you. It's a 30-minute program, and I break it down into interviews of 5 to 10 minutes in length. And then I put it together, and we call it the Sunday Magazine, and that's one of the things I do.
Oh, that's great. Now, would you say that's the definition of public affairs, that list that you made of community concerns?
Yeah, pretty much, if it's responsive to needs like that. Now, they may vary according to region, and there may be others. But there's serious issues. You know, it's not an entertainment program, although I try to do it in an entertaining way, or at least an interesting way. And, yeah, every station does or should be doing a program like that.
I'm really happy to hear that it's still a requirement that some community service is done. I'm glad to hear that's still the case. So, but this is a really important point to make, that different programs have different requirements. So John's describing public affairs, which is needs in the community and that sort of thing, which would be very different from pitching a morning radio show. So John, if someone was pitching you for the morning, what kinds of things might you be interested in?
For the morning radio show, we're very entertainment oriented, and we're pop culture oriented. And so we don't do a lot of interviews, but we do some. You know, we've had some stars on, and we've had we've had the winners of American Idol and Survivor, and kind of the expected things. We've had those on the air, and we have visiting celebrities will come in and we'll talk with them, and sometimes we'll have an author on the air, and it's not our primary focus. But if it's something that's interesting to people in our target audience, and every radio station has a target audience defined by generally by gender and age, and our target audience is women in their 30s and 40s. And so if you have something to say that's interesting and entertainment to young working moms, we imagine people... You know, people are listening to us in the morning, are driving their minivan with their kids and driving them to school. And then they're stopping off and, getting an Egg McMuffin at McDonald's and going into work. And things that are relevant and interesting to them, we're interested in hearing about.
One author that I did have on your program was the woman who wrote about the Mount Hood disaster from the Oregon Episcopal School. You might remember her.
Absolutely, yeah. Her son was one of the survivors of this climbing tragedy that occurred in 1986 when all these kids from Oregon Episcopal School went up and climbed Mount Hood, and not all of them made it back. They got trapped in a snowstorm, and her son was one of the survivors, and she wrote that story, and she came in as a result of your work. She came in to be interviewed along with her son, and it was quite compelling. It was very interesting. Well done.
And it was quite a few years after the actual accident. You know, there's, I'm sure living through something like that would, I can't even imagine it, but I think it was around the late 90s or 2000 that the book finally came out and she was ready and he was ready.
I think that's right. I think it was a good 15 years after it happened, but she hadn't talked. And in fact, most of the people involved in that hadn't talked.
Right.
And so that was newsworthy, and I treated that as news, and it was great.
So another thing, when you're thinking about pitching any kind of radio, you want to take the demographics into account, which John was describing, the type of show, whether it's public affairs or morning drive, that's going to be different. You want to take all those things into account and how, you know, what do you have to offer that would be of interest to them? And if you can tie it into the news, that's even better. If you can have a news hook that makes it really relevant, why you and why now? Wouldn't you say that's a question you ask a lot, John? Why
yeah,
you,
really
why
do.
Now?
Yeah, exactly. That's well put. Because I need a time hook. You know, why now? You know, why should I do it today? We're trying to be relevant today. And then why you? That makes it personal. You know, we want our content to be personally relevant to our audience. So, yeah, why you, why now? That's
yeah.
Well put.
Well, very often as authors, we're you know, very involved in our own work and our own body of work that we want to get out there and share with others. And the thing to remember is you want to think like a producer or think like a radio host. You've got to put yourself in their mind. Why would they care? And so however you pitch it, it has to be why would they care? So again, why you, why now? So John, it reminds me of one time I called up NPR because I had a story that was timely, and I got a producer on the phone, and the first thing right out of her mouth, it wasn't even hello, it was, if this isn't about the earthquake in Chile or wherever it was, now I can't remember, if this isn't about the earthquake, I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I'll call you later. So but NPR I want to talk about because you've just got such a wonderful story. And I know, we're kind of doing an aside here. We'll get back to the pitching and all that in a minute. But, excuse me, John, I've always thought, I mean, you're a great radio guy and a newsman, but you're also a wonderful writer. And tell us all the story. You were listening to NPR. Something inspired you to write a story. And I'm bringing this up because you pitched them. You were pitching them. And I think it's important for other people to hear this. That sometimes, you know, you listen to your intuition and you can really create something great. So,
yeah. Yeah, kind of. Back in the 1990s, NPR on its weekend, All Things Considered, had a feature called the National Story Project. And it was curated by a novelist named Paul Auster. And they were soliciting true stories from people. From listeners, usually about odd coincidences in their life or just interesting stories from their lives. And I heard this, it ran on for a few weeks, and I thought, you know, I did have something happen. And so I just sat down on a whim and fired up the computer and typed this thing up, and it took maybe 10 minutes to write. Mm-hmm. And I barely proofread it. I mean, it was a take one and a first draft, and I emailed it in and forgot about it. And about a year later, I get back from vacation, and there my answering machine was blinking, and I hit it, and it was, this is NPR calling. Wanted to let you know that we're going to be reading your story on the air and need to have you sign some releases. And I had to think, what story? And I thought, wait a second. You know, back in the dim memory, there was a story. And so, yeah, they read the story on the air. And they also put out an anthology, a book, of some of these stories, their favorite stories. And this book came out, and my story was one of them.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
So I had to sign more releases. And I'd never really been in print. I dreamed someday maybe I'll write something that will be in print. I love writing. I do it to entertain myself and my friends sometimes. But it was just bizarre to see my story come out in print. But it came out in print in a book that sold around the world. It was translated, came out in paperback. There were two or three printings on it, and then this story was read by somebody in London. They saw it in a library, that pulled down the book, and they're flipping through, and they happened on the story. And this person happened to be a filmmaker, and he said, "Whoa, by Jove," or whatever, "you know, I must make a film of this story."
I love it.
And so I get this call out of the blue. This is years after the story came out. I mean, this was maybe 10 years later.
Wow.
And he said, "Are you the one who wrote this story?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I must buy the rights." and so I forget what I was paid. It was $10,000, something like that, for the rights
nice.
To the story to make a film of it. The story doesn't amount to all that much, or I didn't think it did. But he came out and flew a film crew out to Oregon, and he filmed this elaborate thing. And then I get another call from somebody in Hollywood, a documentary producer who had also run into the story, and he was working on a film that he was pitching. In fact, he was pitching it as a feature-length film on coincidence and what are the odds and, how could things like this happen? And he said, "I must tell your story." And I checked with the British filmmaker, and I said, "Would you mind if he did this?" And he said, "No, that's fine." So we had two crews in Oregon at the same time doing film versions of this story. And it was very bizarre. If you don't mind, I'll share with you the story. It's very short.
You have to. I mean, I was going to say, you have to read it now with that buildup. You must. Yeah.
I will read it to you. And believe me, I was more surprised than anyone that anything came of this. This is not great writing. This is an email that I sent that just took on
this life. Well, the writing is pretty good. The writing is good. Yes, it is.
Thank you for that. here it goes. It's called Radio Gypsy. And by the way, I wrote it under a different name to avoid complications with my employer, with whom I'm under contract, to be exclusive on the radio, because this turns up on NPR, of all things. So maybe I'm going to get in a lot of trouble now that that's out, but we'll see. So here it goes. This happened during my life as a radio gypsy. In March 1974, I'd taken a job as a news guy on WOW in Omaha and was in my VW Bug pulling away from my parents' house in a Denver suburb when I had to jam on the brakes. A tire had come rolling down a hill and crossed right in front of me, a tire. Poetic omen, I thought, and I hit the road. 2 months later, the job I really wanted at KGW in Portland opened up, and while I was thinking about whether to quit the one in Omaha so soon, I looked out the window of my apartment and saw a tire rolling along in the parking lot. The tire has spoken, I thought, hit the road, it was telling me, and I went for the Portland job. A year passes, and Portland is going well. So well that a promotion to the flagship station, KING, King in Seattle, is offered. But not before I'm driving my Bug at 13th and West Burnside in Portland late at night, and a tire appears out of the fog and rolls down the street. But it doesn't end there. Another year, it's now 1976, and the company wants to send me back to Portland, KGW, with a promotion to news director and morning news anchor. And this time, the rolling wheel, actually only a tire rim, appeared heading south on the Alaskan Way Viaduct in Seattle. It was in the left lane. Late 1977, I'm on the road again to KYA in San Francisco. My old VW is packed with my stereo and my cat and all my stuff, and I'm about to get on the freeway. I haven't seen any rolling tires, but then I hear a grinding noise from the back of the car, and I feel like I'm skidding, and the car doesn't steer. Scary, I put on the brakes. in time to see my own back right wheel, which had come loose, shooting down the road and coming to rest in a ditch. A mechanic had forgotten to put in a cotter pin. The rolling tire was my own damn wheel. And there ended the chain of rolling tires, or so I thought, until 1984. I was back in Seattle, a big radio executive now, but still a gypsy of the business. And I accepted a job for lots of money in Houston, Texas. Every instinct spoke against it, the city, the vibes, the fact that I had two little children now and I really wanted to raise them in the Pacific Northwest. But the contract and the money clouded my judgment. I flew down there to begin the job, my wife followed by car. She was driving on Interstate 5 coming through North Portland when, crunch, the hood of her Volvo took the impact of something that had come down from a road that ran above the freeway. It bounced off her car, hit two other cars, and was stopped by the median. Shaken but not hurt, she looked and saw what it was, a big, huge truck tire. We did Houston, but it was terrible. It lasted only a year. And then we gratefully came back to Portland to raise our family. No more itchy feet, no more radio gypsy, and no more damn rolling tires. And that's it. That's all.
That's wonderful.
The story.
That's a great story.
It got turned into those two films,
yeah,
both of which sank without a trace.
Oh, but, you know, I saw one of them, and I thought it was really good. I thought it was really well put together.
I thought they did a nice job. He didn't like the way I read it, and so he had a professional voice actor read it. The problem was that I sounded too much like an American radio guy.
Okay.
Hello, dude. I am an American radio guy. That's okay. I didn't care. I didn't care.
It's a great story, and I think there's some really important messages there, too. And one is you did it on a whim, okay? I mean, you did it on a whim. So for anyone listening, if you're looking for media and that kind of thing, you might hear about some opportunity, and it just strikes you, and you think, wow, I'm gonna send that pitch. I'm gonna try that. And
yeah,
why not? But look how long it took for you to hear back from them.
Right, I'd completely forgotten.
A year.
Yeah, a year before NPR did something, probably another 10 before that filmmaker contacted me. So, yeah, an immediate response, or the lack of immediate response, does not constitute rejection.
No, it doesn't, because their timeline is often different from our own. You know, we have a time, well, I want it to happen now, and I want this to happen now, and this to happen now, and it often doesn't. Sometimes it does, but often doesn't. I'll hear back from pitches I sent out for months, a year later. That's not entirely uncommon. It's
right.
Not real common, but it does happen for sure.
You know, it's hard to predict timing.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes a pitch will be picked up immediately. You know, as a matter of fact, on this 30-minute public affairs show that I do, mm-hmm, it was dropped into my lap without warning in, I think, August. We had a staff reduction here, and so somebody was let go, and it just fell to me to come up with half an hour with not a lot of notice. And so I get out of this meeting, and, you know, I have to come up with half an hour by this weekend. So I said, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I went to my email, and I found a pitch from a publicist for a young author in Detroit, someplace in Michigan, whose day job is developing smartphone apps. But at night, he wrote a novel, and it's been published. And the pitch from this publicist in New York included talking about going for your dreams and being motivated and inspired. And I thought, great. I called up the publicist, and she was delighted that I wanted to talk to her guy. And she said, what date would you like to do it? And I said, well, today. And I said, how about in the next hour?
Oh, my.
And she audibly hyperventilated.
Really?
Yeah. She said, okay, I'll do my best. I'll email you. And as she hung up, I heard her say, oh, God. And all I could think is, you've never dealt with radio. We spin on a dime.
Yeah.
Radio is very, very flexible. And often if you get a call from radio, chances are they are not planning days or weeks in the future.
Right.
You know, that they've got a hole in a show that they need to fill right now.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe 10 years, and it might be 10 minutes. Who knows?
Yeah. It's really true. I mean, radio is fast. Sometimes guests don't show up. And so when you do a radio interview, you want to let the producer, the host, let them know, not necessarily on the air, but let them know that you're available. If they do have a cancellation or something comes up, you can step in and you'll be there. But then, of course, you have to be available.
That's a good point. She was able to come up with her guy, and he was surprised, too. He talked to me on his cell phone from out in front of his office on the street. He didn't want to do it there in the office because he was at his day job. And it worked out fine. And he got on the air, and he was, on all these radio stations, and I think he was more surprised than anyone.
Oh, that's great. That's a great story. So, John, if people are to pitch your public affairs show now, what kind of how do you like to receive information? Do you like an email? Do you like people to connect with you on social media first? I mean, what is it that you like?
Either way, I get a lot of emails, and I have to make a quick decision. And a lot is based on the subject line. Mm. And if the subject line gets my attention, tells me something about it, then I'll open the email, and then I'll read the first paragraph pretty much. And I'll have to make a decision based on that. Whether to keep going. I mean, I get hundreds of emails a day, and I just don't have time to read each one.
Mm-hmm.
But if it, if it gets my attention as being potentially relevant to our target audience, either for the morning show or for the public affairs show, then I'll read the whole thing. So email is a great way. Social media is good as well, although I use that primarily to interact with listeners. I have a Facebook page. It's not a fan page. I treat it as more of a personal contact that I have with listeners to our morning show. Anybody here who's listening is welcome to friend me. Just look up John Erickson Portland and send me a friend request and interact with me. I love to hear from people. And if you have a book or if you have something to pitch. Sure, that's a great way of getting me as well. But get me through email. It's johnerickson@k103.com or Facebook. I'm not a big Twitter guy. I have a Twitter account. I use it sometimes. I have a problem with a 140-character thing. I guess I'm,
Does make you have to keep it short.
yeah, you just have to keep it short. But on the one hand, I'm saying, get my attention in, 2 milliseconds. But on the other hand, don't confine me to 140 characters. I know it's a contradiction. I'm a hypocrite. I'm sorry.
What's an example of a subject line that would grab you? Can you think of one? I know that's kind of on the spot. But
I give you just sort of a general guideline. I need to go local. If I can see something in the subject line that says something about Portland or Oregon or the Northwest, that's very helpful. If somebody is on a book tour, author coming to Portland, I'm going to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Just something that's going to tell me it's relevant here locally. And so it doesn't have to be cute or clever. I'll see the whole subject line. And, just get my attention with the content and with the potential local application.
Okay.
And that works for me.
And then how do you feel about phone calls? Is that something you invite or no?
No, it doesn't work so well, in part because we're in new studios and I haven't really figured out the phones.
Appreciate the honesty.
that's honest. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very complicated phone system. I'm not sure how to get my voicemail. I don't get that much. Frankly, the way to get me is email.
Got it. Definitely.
So phones aren't that effective for me.
So do you have any pet peeves?
Spam is one.
Mm.
If I hear too much from someone, then I tend to ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
Another is that people don't send out books anymore. I used to get lots of books. And often interviews would result from the book,
mm-hmm.
that perhaps might not have had I not had the opportunity to read the book. I love to read, and I know it costs something, and especially when people are self-published, you know, there's a unit cost involved, and perhaps it's not worth it. But for publishing companies that, you know, that have the stock, I think it's a good idea to put your book in the hands of people who can potentially deal with it on the air.
Yeah, and for those who are self-published, having a certain number that you're willing to give away is important for the reasons that John's mentioning. And also what I've found very often, NPR is one in particular, you can send one book. They have a pile, an area where they put them all. Anyone from any of the shows can look them over and decide if they want to cover something on it. So you don't have to send one to every show, but you do need to send one because that's how they're going to decide. And then in other stations, say at John's, you know, Clear Channel, maybe he isn't going to do something with it, but someone else might come along and see it and decide, hey, you know, I think I'd
That's
like to cover
exactly
this.
Right. We have a table here where if somebody gets a book and they don't want it, then it ends up on the table and other people go and shop there at that table. And it's not only books. I mean, we get merchandise, marketing merchandise. Fox Television is, you know, not the news channel, but the network with The Simpsons and all that. They are notorious for sending stuff. And we get lots of gadgets related to their shows. Plus, we get DVDs of their upcoming shows, and that's helpful too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that's not about books, not in your purview, but it's helpful for us to be able to see the product and to experience it.
Well, I just remember a lot of the local restaurants always sending food, and
yeah.
That was always eaten immediately.
That's always welcome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no problem there.
So, John, are there any times when sending an email would be better than others, or do you just wait until you're ready to look at your email? I mean, that kind of thing. Does that?
I'm one of those who checks email often, all day and into the evening, because a lot comes into the email, you know, relevant to news and in-station things, and so I check a lot. No, there is no ideal time.
Okay.
Any time is fine. You're welcome to email me any time at all.
One thing I do caution my clients with, and you can, I'd love to hear what you have to say about this, is not to pitch kind of an unrelated story. If there's like a major news event going on, it just looks bad to be pitching something that's totally unrelated, and especially if it's a really serious story.
Exactly right. And, you know, the corollary to that is that if you have something that is relevant to a major story, it's really good to send that out if it is actually relevant to the story.
Would you say like the next day or the same day that the news is breaking?
Next day is probably pretty good. Same day might not be bad if you have an expert in the field in whatever it is. If there is, you know, if there's a horrible earthquake someplace and you have an expert in earthquake preparedness or somebody who has survived an earthquake or something that is relevant to what has happened, the sooner you can get that out, the sooner that guest is going to be booked. Because people need to fill time during breaking news coverage.
Yeah.
So often when you see, you know, people on television, you hear them on the radio, they're just padding for time in between learning actual developments. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's why on CNN, you know, they seem to always have an expert to shove in front of the camera.
Oh, yeah.
And most often that comes out of their, you know, out of their own Rolodex.
Well, or people like me. Because you remember
or people
when...
like you.
Remember when Martha Stewart was arrested, when that whole story broke about the insider trading and all that? Well, I had a personal brand expert that I was working with out of Los Angeles. And I called CNN. I had all of them booked by the next morning.
Perfect.
And CNN was that day. We got him in another studio in Los Angeles, and that evening he was on the whole
right
next
then.
Day. Yeah,
right
I
then
mean,
is a good time.
A news hook is amazing if you can tie in, or if it isn't a hard news hook, it can be like a cultural, something that's happening culturally or on the calendar. I had another author who wrote a book called The Chick's Guide to Football, and we did a huge thing around Super Bowl, and we had her on everything. That was great.
Sure, sure, and it doesn't have to be hard news things. I mean, you know, the whole Miley Cyrus, you know, experience. What are parents supposed to do with that?
Yeah, I wondered how you handled it that morning.
Yeah, I don't quite remember. Well, no, I was out of the country after that happened,
so
mercifully, I didn't have to do that. But how do you talk to your kids? And they all now want to be Miley. They want to be Miley Cyrus for Halloween. That's the number one costume.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, with the foam rubber, you know, number one finger and all that. And it's, so what do parents do with that? If you have a book about that, that's good to have out there.
Yeah, that would be good. So, that's so funny. So any other tips that you would like to add? I think what I'd like to do is kind of open up the phone lines if people have questions. So the way that you can do that is you can hit *2 on your phone, and then that shows me that your hand is raised on the dashboard here. And I'm going to check the Facebook group really quick. I know Becky is listening in on the webcast, so she's not on the phone, but she's on the webcast. Hi, Becky. I don't see any questions there, but *2 if you do have a question. None at the moment. I think they're probably bowled over by all this information.
Yeah. Well, cool.
So the length of a pitch to you could just be one short email, few bullet points, put local or Portland in the title.
Couple of paragraphs and contact info.
Okay.
And definitely to the point. And, you know, not terribly short, but say what you have.
All right. Well, John, anything else you want to share today?
No, I want to say happy Halloween and happy October and a happy government shutdown. It seems as though people are a little bit cranky.
Yeah.
On my own Facebook page, I mean, people are just kind of generally grouchy about things right now. I think the tone of the debate and the national zeitgeist right now is not not one of love and peace, and I think that's too bad. I hope this gets resolved soon.
Definitely.
But I want to thank you for having me, Joanne.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate your taking the time to be here and share your wealth of information and your story, which I think is great.
Bizarre.
And who knows when it'll pop up again.
Oh, I fully expect that there will be something will happen. Something will happen. I don't know. But Joanne, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, John, I'll let you go. Thank you, and take care of yourself.
Okay, we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.